Hello and welcome to episode 46 of the Back to Front Show. How are you doing, Kieran?
I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad at all. Not too bad at all. It's a cold but sunny day here in Bath. What's it like with you in Cheltenham?
It is standard for England. It is grey and dull.
Bit like the month. January feels a bit grey and dull.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah, we were just talking about that.
Have you been suffering from the January blues?
Not too bad, no. Just been busy, so.
Busy.
Yeah.
How was your...
Keeping my head down.
Keep your head down. That's going to give you a bad back, surely.
Yeah, I've already got a bad back.
You don't need any more encouragement there, do you? None whatsoever. Have you been doing any DIY over the festive period?
Not DIY, no. It's a bit, you know, well, anything exterior to the house, it's a bit of a miserable weather for that. But no, it's just lugging children around, or child around.
I was going to say,
I should say.
You've pluralised.
So had another one.
Yeah, pluralised it there. 2 months away and you've had another child. This is breaking news. This is breaking news. This is
quick work.
Yeah, bigger than Brexit.
Yeah.
So we had intended to do an end of year roundup, but you know, as per.
But you know us.
Yes. something happened along the way to that fantastic end of year review. Rest assured, it would have been great.
Yes.
I think there were puns galore, prizes, yeah. Probably even a phone in. Who knows?
Yeah.
I wonder if we could ever do a phone in. How would that work in this podcast land? No idea.
It doesn't redo it, does it? It's not live. Maybe we should do a live show.
But it would probably just still be me and you.
Maybe. Well, but obviously we have to have a live audience. We'd have to arrange a date, a time, and people would then, you know, would flock to the live event.
Do you mean like as in person and we stream it or maybe
what, like Badil and Skinner Unplanned?
That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
It would, yeah.
We could wear masks so no one would know who we were.
Cynical web veterans, a couch and a stage.
I love that. We should do that. If anyone is listening, let us know if you think that would be fun and what you'd pay
If anybody's listening from any wealthy tech startups and wants to sponsor that.
Well, that would be good, wouldn't it? I don't know. Your ride is pretty expensive. It's probably got to have like artisanal coffee and...
Blue M&M's.
Do you know the story behind that?
No.
Okay, I'll tell you another time.
Right, okay.
Moving on. We have some new members in the club.
Do we?
Yes, indeed.
You never tell me this off air.
Well, you never ask.
Fair enough.
And, you know, you're not really interested, let's be honest. Yes, Luke Melvin, Craig Cooper, thank you so much for joining.
Thank you, it's, Luke and Craig.
Poor old Kat, she's still the lone female voice on our...
Come on.
On our wall there.
The diversity is poor on
it
that.
It is. Do you think that's because our cynical web male ramblings only attract like people?
Like-minded cynical males.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, if you're female cynical, we'd love to hear from you. Bring it on.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you for joining there. Hopefully, they haven't actually sent any imagery to prove that they'll be wearing their pin badges with pride or adorning their laptops with stickers.
No, we need more of that.
Yeah, well, some, not more, any.
Well, yeah, I was trying to, you know.
Yeah. Anyways, but...
yeah.
Oh, and this will make you laugh. Just before... I say just before Christmas. It was actually late October.
July. okay.
Yeah, we were listed in the ultimate list of developer podcasts.
Well, that makes sense.
I think so.
You know, this is a very, very much a, you know, at the code face...
Cutting edge.
Type podcast.
Bleeding edge.
Yeah. We talk code every time we speak.
I mean, the website's probably in React or something.
Or something.
Yeah. Webpack. Have you heard it? No, I don't know. Anyway, what are those techs Neil Kinnish uses?
We'll make a fool of ourselves in a minute.
I know. Back on with the show. Anyway, you've been busy.
I have.
What have you been up to?
It's non-stop Kelowna for me.
Again, every time you say that, I think of something else, but anyway.
Well, that's your mind.
Mm, true.
Coffee. A lot of coffee. We've been making videos. What else have we been doing since we last spoke? There's new products coming.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And Kelowna Labs is in the works.
What's that? Some kind of skunk coding factory?
It's sort of a, you know, underground, members-only club.
Ooh.
No, it's a academic collaboration. It couldn't be less seedy. It's basically a collaboration with academics. One of the projects is with the Uni of Bath. All around, sort of like contributing to knowledge in the sphere of coffee, because there's not a lot of research gone into, like, especially sustainability and that kind of thing.
Interesting.
Yeah, so we're working on that. As I said, new products, compostable capsules.
Ooh, coming. That'll please people.
They will. People love a bit of compostable.
A Twitter-friendly product.
It's very much a Twitter-friendly product, yeah. Yeah, so that's the stuff we've been working on. Very busy. How about you?
Yeah, lots of video work, lots of new products, lots of labs. No, none of that. no, planning. Planning. January is planning month for me. Work out what we're going to do over the next 10 months. And then
10 months?
Well, yes, because December's always kind of like back to planning. December, January.
So what you're essentially saying is that at Shopify, you're working 10 months of the year.
And 2 months planning.
Okay.
Planning's important, right?
It is. No, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm actually in a quandary because I have to go to the annual sort of get together for Shopify next week.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. I'm worried about my footwear.
Okay.
Well, you know, it's minus 30. I can never seem to find appropriate footwear. You don't want to take a pair of wellies.
Is this Ottawa? Ottawa? You'd have thought they might say, we're taking you all to, you know, Costa Rica. Or something. No?
No.
Team away day in Costa Rica?
It's 2,500 people. It's a lot of people to take to Costa Rica.
That is a lot of people. How many were them when you joined?
About 90.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're old school.
Yes, I know, with a K, most definitely. But
yeah.
Yeah, so I'm fretting over my footwear choice. You see, they seem to have it down over there. They've got like indoor shoes, they have snow boots, then they have like ski wear.
But who wants to lug that halfway across the planet?
Exactly. Anyway, I can't do winter sports.
Just take some DAPS, mate. You'll be fine.
I'm not insured for winter sports. DAPS. Hey, so for anyone out there who knows what a DAP is, you're showing your regionality there, Kieran. So when I moved to the Southwest, especially when having kids, and someone said, oh, so-and-so, you know, Evie's got to bring DAPS. I'm like, I'm sorry, what? DAPS or DAPS? I'm like...
DAPS. It's DAPS, mate.
I was like, DAP? Oh, trainers, but they, so there's some
not trainers.
Well, no, they're not,
it's
trainers.
It's clearly a plimsoll.
Well, so I did read somewhere there was some there's some debate about the derivation of the term DAP. So is it an acronym?
Behave.
Dunlop All Plimsoll Shoe. DAPS.
Yeah.
Is one, but then that's contested as well. So who knows? Anyway, it's like those, you can still buy them, mainly in H&M in the sort of under five section for about £4. It's that kind of black with a little elasticated top at the...
Or white.
Or, no, it's got to be a black DAP, hasn't it?
No. It can be a white DAP.
Surely that's...
Depends whether it's for indoor or outdoor, doesn't it? Because obviously, you don't want to get any black marks on the gym floor, do you?
Well, no, the sole's not black. That was always the kind of beigey colour, no?
Well, the orangey colour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. DAPs. Yeah, I'm sure like two of our listeners...
I'm pretty sure I was on a white DAPs man when I was a kid.
Well, that would follow.
Yeah, it would. Yeah.
Trying to be different. You know, I can see you going home and chastising your mother for buying you the wrong DAPs.
Oh, yeah. That does sound accurate. It's surprising how much you know about my childhood.
It's because they're so similar. Anyway, big news for episode 46.
What?
Do you know, for episode 46, that means we're closing in on 50.
Mate. We smashed this. It's only been 10 years we've been doing this.
It's actually 4. Which is not bad, is it?
Oh, God. Yeah. No, well, no, of course not.
I mean, that's, you know, we're probably...
10 episodes a year.
That's not bad, is it?
It's not, no.
So if you think we take off...
We should just say we're monthly.
January and December for planning. It's every month.
It is every month. Or we could just say we just average a monthly podcast, even though often we don't actually achieve that.
No.
Anyway, big news.
Big news, yeah. Medium, no more. Discuss.
Well, yeah. I thought it was sort of... the conversation after Ev's announcement was more interesting to me than the actual announcement itself, because it's kind of inevitable, right?
Well, let's go back. So, Ev Williams, serial entrepreneur. There's a lot of serial entrepreneurs out there.
He's not short of a bob or two.
Well, you think not. Blogger, Twitter, you may have heard of those. Started Medium 4-5 years ago now. I think he started it when he was maybe still at Twitter, just on the way out or leaving. Right. They've taken about 120-something million US in VC, and they announced...
No. You just under-egged that massively.
Oh, is it?
Well, not massively. You've got 132 million.
Well, what's 7, 10, 12 million between friends? It's your weekly coffee bill, right? So they took this with this premise of like reimagining online publishing and long form content. And for a long time, it was a closed platform, very much driven by long form content. And obviously, it's now an open platform. They've got things like publications and you can all this stuff. Everyone listening to this probably has heard of Medium anyway. But it's definitely become known as this kind of a Medium post. It's a style of writing. It definitely doesn't seem to attract that kind of shorter form. Quick.
I think journalists and writers online, bloggers and things, would call them think pieces, wouldn't they?
Yeah, and a lot of big names like Obama's posted on there. You know, it's attracted a lot of big names. But
it has.
All that's to say that Ev Williams announced a week or so ago that he was basically getting rid of a third of the workforce, down from 150 to 100, and they were basically taking a step back from some of the monetization ideas that they'd introduced a year ago around advertising and so forth to kind of dream it up again. Now, this understandably caused some comment, which is what you were alluding to at the beginning. So, tell us a bit more about the comments, because they are interesting.
Well, I think we should also say that one of the things they've achieved is probably one of the reasons it's been so successful, especially for long form writing, is they've achieved a beautiful product. Like they've created the best writing environment around, haven't they?
It's very, very nice. Yeah, there's a lot of hidden features in there that, you know, you can unearth as well. Things like how to do code highlighting and you know, just some very nice subtle things that you don't realize are happening, the way that they transform like dashes to M dashes in context and all that kind of stuff. Very, very big, large attention to detail for sure.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's been particularly popular with long-form writers, because it's a very comfortable environment to write in. And also they've got quite a lot of nice sort of hidden features for editors and things, haven't they? We saw some guy talk, didn't we, from Medium?
We did at CanvasConf last year. Well, no, not last year now, was it? It was previous year. Blimey. Yeah. Really fascinating stack of tech. He was talking a lot around how they were... bringing in these, I think was he a product data guy, and he was looking at like algorithms for how you can do discovery and things like that. And
yeah, he'd been on Obama's team, hadn't he, for tech for the election. So he was, I can't remember his name, but he obviously had pedigree.
For sure, yeah, he was really interesting chat. But I mean, where does Medium go from here? So they basically said that it's an end to the kind of ideas around advertising. They want to go back to their original ethos of rethinking publishing online. Mm-hmm. But I guess it made a lot of people's ears prick up and sort of think, okay, is this the end of Medium? Or maybe they didn't articulate it that way, but you start to think, don't you? What's going to happen here? It's clearly not.
Well, I think one of the mistakes that he made in his post is that he basically didn't have an answer. So he wrote a post saying, we're abandoning the plans we had, we're laying off a third of the workforce, but we haven't actually got a specific plan yet for what's happening with Medium. And that left the door open for people to say, is it all over?
Hmm. Yeah. And I think...
which may have been the intention.
It's interesting though, isn't it? I mean, they get like 60 million uniques a month or something crazy. I'll stand corrected on the figure. They've obviously got a lot of eyeballs. And the traditional method would be then to sort of sell advertising around that, but I think that doesn't marry up with their ethos, does it, about sort of creating a beautiful immersive experience that you know, and allowing publishers to create revenue and income from their writing. I think it does so much right. I mean, I was very tongue-in-cheek joking about, like, you know, everyone's turning to Medium, oh, it's a Medium quote-unquote post, that kind of style, and there's a huge amount of that, you know, things like how 12 grams of protein taken at midday every day will improve your life by, you know, 3,000%.
And how to crush it.
Yeah, it's littered with that stuff.
It is.
Which may be my cynicism, but there is a lot of it. But then there is some great writing there. But I wonder, is the network effect working? Are people actually then willing to pay for the content? And I mean, David Hanemar Hansen made a very interesting kind of riposte to that. I mean, as 37 Signals as was now Basecamp, they moved their blog Lock, Stock and Barrel over to Medium, and they have a Medium publication. And by their own reports, it's actually hugely benefited them. But I think, you know, they had a huge loyal following. They are consistently right. The whole team of them consistently write, you know, really interesting pieces, often provocative, often very opinionated, gets a lot of response and sharing and so forth. So they are probably benefiting from the network effect. But it kind of makes me think, you know, the likes of me and you, is Medium a great thing? Is it a platform we should embrace? I've toyed with it. I would never think about even making money from it. Or is it just a reposting tool? You know, it's the thing you have to do. You post a link to Twitter, you syndicate the piece to Medium.
No, I think it's more than that. I think before we get on to the specifics of the replies to Ev's post, I was going to say that one of the things that they're doing that is really quite important, especially given all this the recent stuff with Brexit in the UK and Trump in the States around fake news. The pieces that are written on sites that have advertising on them are very often written to align with the commercial imperatives of the companies that fund those pieces.
Mm.
And one of the important things that Medium is doing is allowing people right now to write in a way where they do not feel in any way beholden to an advertiser or to the company that's paying them. It's free and open, and you can get a lot of eyeballs on it. And he touches on that in his writing about, you know, the layoffs, etc. He says that, you know, they want to get back to that original purpose for Medium, and to not cloud it with, you know, an advertising-based model that will then change the nature of you know, people writing stuff just for clicks, as opposed to writing stuff to, you know, to actually educate or to inform. And I think that that's, but what's really, you know, complicated about that is then asking the question that you just asked, whether people will actually pay for that. I know that The Guardian, for example, are struggling with that very thing right now, aren't they? So
yeah,
if you read a Guardian article, there is a banner at the bottom of the site that says, for just £5 a month, you can sponsor us effectively to write this kind of journalism. And I believe The Guardian's actually been given a sort of deadline by their shareholders or whatever, by which they have to make the company profitable, or they'll get the chop.
Yeah, I think I'll stand corrected again, as always, but I think at least it used to be, was a kind of trust-owned business. It wasn't, it was kind of deep. The history of the funding goes back a long way, but it's still kind of a private entity. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I think this notion of advertising and, you know, how I guess objective can an author be if they are taking advertising, it does beg a question. And I think perhaps, you know, that original ethos is where they want to get back to, which surprised me by some of the announcements last year. I would have thought, and this was alluded to into one of the other ripostes from an aptly named Medium publication called Bullshitist. I hope that doesn't lose us our family rating. Dear Medium, why didn't you ask us? Where the author actually goes into compares the success of WordPress.com, the business model, and said, well, why didn't you have a look, Medium? Why wouldn't you consider this? So if you're not familiar, WordPress has always kind of had two sides to the coin, hasn't it? Well, originally it was obviously an open source project that you can install on your own servers. You could then hack away. It had all the relevant licenses and so on and so forth. And then they started WordPress.com, where it was free to blog. But if you wanted, you know, more, like you wanted to buy a domain or you wanted to be able to change the theme, or you wanted to be able to install plugins and so on and so forth, or then you actually paid. And so what they also did was they allowed huge organizations, many sort of blue chip companies, that gave them a infrastructure platform to use the software that they may be using in-house, but without all the hassle of taking care of servers. And so it actually was a net benefit financially, as much as the ability to you know, to host and run you know, world-class blogging software through WordPress VIP. So, you know, why hasn't, I guess, the question that Linda Carroll asked in this piece, why wouldn't Medium consider that? It's more of a case of, you know, you still keep it free, but if you want more features, you pay for them. So it's more focused on the platform and what you get from the platform in terms of technology and simplicity and infrastructure than it is around paying for content. What do you think about that?
Well, I think the first thing I was going to say is that Matt Mellenweg set up WordPress and Automattic in terms of the business structure very, very carefully. I mean, I know that has evolved since it first started, but he's purposely decoupled the production of the software itself from the commercial activities of Automattic, which is his company that runs WordPress.com. But I don't think that it's necessary to do that in order to achieve what WordPress has achieved, what Automattic has achieved. I think that they could have equally kept that closed source and achieved the same results with WordPress.com. I think it's helped that you can install it on your own servers, because it's grown. Well, it's grown what you'd call partners at Shopify, I guess. It's grown those people who are working with the platform, because there's absolutely no barrier to entry for doing that. But Medium, I don't think, needed to do that. This is often a question that has been asked about other platforms in the past as well, isn't it? Like Instagram, for example, people said, you know, before doing ads, why didn't you just ask us if we'd pay $5 a month for this? Or why won't you give us ad free for $5 a month, or whatever the, you know, it's been asked in a different way from other platforms. And I think it would be perfectly possible to do that. But I suppose the question then becomes, how does the writer get paid to produce that content?
Yeah.
Do you follow me? So, you know, it's one thing that Medium can fund their can fund what they do through add-ons and the like, but it becomes a sort of, if we're trying to create this sort of free press environment, then I suppose the natural progression of that is to say, well, a bit like Patreon, why don't we just allow people to give money to these publications?
Yeah.
That would be the extension of it, wouldn't it? So that therefore, you know, Medium are getting paid through add-ons, through extras by the people publishing these articles, and the authors are getting paid via Patreon-style donations or subscriptions, however you want to look at it. But clearly, that isn't a route that many of these companies are keen to take.
Yeah, it's interesting. I agree. I think the reality, sadly, is very, very few people get paid to write. You know, we've both worked in that kind of editorial side and know that even deeply technical articles, where your skill and technical knowledge has to be considerably high, have to, you know, you may be attracting a couple of hundred US dollars to write that, and it's going to be a considerable amount of your time.
Yes,
but thankfully, due to the devaluation of the pound, that's actually not a bad deal if you're based in the UK. But it's actually really difficult to make a living, and just from purely writing. So I think a lot of the people that you find who you might consider successful writers with big followings, they tend to have something else going on. The writing tends to be their form of putting their voice out there, and there's always a very subtle and relevant ask elsewhere in their offering. So you can go back to their site, they may have a book, a course, a PDF, that you can buy or something that you can subscribe to. So I think for a lot of people, Basecamp being a great case in point, you know, they've got four or five bestsellers. They've obviously got Basecamp, the product, and their blogging serves as their kind of marketing strategy. What I think I've always got the impression from Medium is they're trying to solve is that, you know, how can you and me, the likes of me and you, who maybe or aspire to be or potentially are good writers with something to say, how can we get compensated financially for that? And I don't think there's many ways they can do that. One is obviously advertising. The other is that you can give people the opportunity to donate through the platform for reading that piece, whether, like you say, like a Patreon or a micro payment. Micro payments was a buzzword 3 or 4 years ago. It seems to have kind of dropped off now.
It hasn't really worked though, micro payments. I think we've talked about this in the past. The YouTube have dropped it and Vimeo have dropped it just from a video perspective. You know, there was a thing called Tip Jar, which was a feature on Vimeo Pro, I think. Things like Flatter have basically gone the way of the dodo. I'm trying to think of ones that have worked. I mean, Patreon seems to have worked. If you subscribe to people on YouTube now, very often, the big push is to get people to subscribe to their Patreon. I know Dan Benjamin went that route as well with 5x5.
He did. And he's talked about that, quite a bit. I think he'd be the first to admit that it doesn't pay the bills, right? You know, it's a nice,
yes,
it's a lovely, lovely thing to have. And
what it's designed to do, I think, is it's designed to flatten out that, you know, for someone like a YouTube, we're going a bit off-piste here, but for someone who like a YouTube YouTuber who gets a big spike of money every time they post a video, I'm not saying lots of money, but they get sort of spiky cash flow, as it were, because they post a video and they get some money for that, for the 250,000 views they get or whatever. It's designed to flatten out that spike, isn't it, in a way, from a business model point of view. They're trying to say, you know, yeah, you get paid for the video because you got advertising on that video, but the benefit of using Patreon is that your regular subscribers get their content without ads, and you get a bit of flatter cash flow.
Yeah, a bit more regular. Yeah, totally.
And I think that could work for Medium. Though there's a double-edged sword here, isn't there? In the sense that, you know, people would argue that long-form content is unpopular. But do you think that the eyeballs that, you know, it's interesting, isn't it? Like, the page view thing is really interesting because people are clicking on it, but is that in the same way as they click on a link bait article in BuzzFeed? You know, I'd love to see, I haven't, and I'm sure it's out there because they're quite open with this stuff. I'd love to see the actual reading statistics of Medium. Because I think so many people, and maybe I'm wrong, but I get the impression that so many people will share a Medium post because of that, as you've talked about already, that Medium post style. A lot of the stuff that's written on there is quite sort of inspirational type stuff. People will share that very quickly on Twitter, but won't necessarily read it. They'll just read the title and the first few lines.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. It is interesting though. I think that there's definitely two sides just from this conversation. There's the how can I get paid, and how can I give money to Medium to make my involvement with the platform more functional. So, again, just going back to this article on Bullshitist, which is the name, please, Apple, if you're listening, keep our family rating. Yes. So things like, she's saying, you can't customize a profile page. Yes, you can publish a publication, but kind of pointless if you're just one person. Publications seem to come into their own. And I struggle from the same thinking. You know, could you just replace your blog with it? Well, it's kind of really geared towards collaborative or multiple writers, which makes a publication interesting.
And the purpose is that meant to be that if you are an individual writer, you can submit your article to that publication.
Yeah.
So, which has a following.
So you can't customize your profile page. And I think that's very, very true. Whereas you can a publication. You can't put a subscribe option on the posts. So you have to go to a third party. There's no ability to promote your post. That could be akin to... And she says here, you don't have to go all sleazeball like Facebook and remove people's access to the audience that works their butt off to build, but letting members promote their posts for a nominal fee to grow their audience might be better than selling our eyeballs to outside advertisers.
Yeah, I agree with what she's saying. But the two things I took away from that, one was how do the writers get paid? But the second thing was, you know, as someone who's worked on product development, you know as well as I do that the things she's listing are not things they won't have considered. You know, this is the sort of often from a consumer perspective who uses a platform in a specific way. It's very easy to sit there and say, well, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Why don't you do the other thing? But to find a consensus across the whole, such a big user base for those features that would be useful and to design them into a product and to make it functional is a much bigger challenge, isn't it? Because she's coming from it from a very specific point of view, which is that she's an independent writer on Medium, running her own publication, I'm guessing, because that's what the aforementioned title is. So she's got a very specific perspective, whereas if you're, say, DHH, and you're also running a publication, but you've got five or six people that contribute to that, that's a very different, and you're funding that using a different means, as you said, you've got a company that's basically bankrolling that publication. You've got a different set of imperatives, haven't you?
Yeah. I think and
so.
Yeah, there's definitely
finding the common features to charge for is the challenge. You know, it's very easy to write a post that says do this, do that, do the other thing, and you'll make money. Well, but you're not seeing the whole picture.
Yeah, there's definitely two sides to this. One is how can Medium keep the lights on? And as DHH alludes to, before they get back to sort of zero, they've got that VC weight to deal with in terms of their investment. You know, I've no idea how these things pan out, whether the investors maybe think Medium would be sold and that's how they multiply their investment, or whether it's a long-term play. But there's that to consider for sure. Every time someone takes VC, you have to think about where does that lead the company longer term. And then second,
the point where Medium is at in terms of 132 million, surely the only option for that is a big exit from a sale, or to go public. But until you're profitable, that's very hard, isn't it?
Right, and then the other side is how do writers get remunerated for their writing? And I think they're two very, very different questions. And I'm not quite sure. Well, it wasn't clear from Ev's post, reading between the lines, that they are publicly at least. And let's be honest, they will have had a million of these conversations in the offices, as you rightly said. There's a clear path or direction, at least publicly, for either of those to be answered. So I think it'd be really interesting to see. Would I pay to read a Medium post? Would I pay to have access to a publication? I don't know. I do pay for content. We've both talked about this before, whether it be printed or online. You know, we pay for things like Spotify. We both rent, I'm sure, numerous web apps between us. I do pay for online storage and Dropbox. I'm not immune to paying for things that are inherently useful to me, but they offer a different utility than maybe subscribing to a publication. Whereas you are kind of at the mercy of someone's schedule to write as well. So if it was a monthly fee and they didn't write anything, is that okay? Or is it a case of just topping up a bank within Medium, and when I like something, they get a dollar? I don't know. But again, that doesn't answer how do Medium make money question unless they take a cut.
I think one of the things that's interesting about this is the responses to Ev's article are all very quite narrow in their perspective, I guess. So you've got the Linda Carroll article, which the bullshittest article, which. Is very much from a writer's perspective. And then you've got DHH, who is commenting on it from a tech startup perspective, but he's also got his own baggage about not liking VC. attached to that. So the article is very much focused on how venture capital has murdered Medium.
Hmm.
But the one that I found really interesting was the one that Linda Carroll references, which is the article by The Investor, the guy from Google Ventures.
Right.
Or GV, as it's now known. What was interesting about that was, you know, I mean, Linda boils it down to, where has it gone? Let me see. 60 million monthly readers now, page views galore. So step two is simply to slap some BAM ads on the site, while step three is to profit, right? Now, that kind of makes me think DHH is right. If that's the attitude of the investors of this company, you know, there's clearly a big disconnect. What I'm trying to get at is there's clearly a big disconnect between the VC's vision for this business and Ev's vision for this business.
Hmm.
And, you know, I guess going back to our YouTube thing, they've kind of been there and done all this. You know, unlike a lot of platforms, what YouTube seem to do is they seem to just dabble in all these options. So they're like, let's give them a flatter style tip jar thing and see if anybody gives any money. Let's let people subscribe by YouTube Red and see if that works. Let's, you know, let's let people just pay for individual videos. Let's see if that works. So they've played with this a lot. And I know that video is a different medium to medium. But it strikes me that we haven't quite got to the perfect way or the perfect mechanism for us all to consume content that we like and to pay people for it.
Mm.
I don't think anybody that I speak to anyway would say these people shouldn't get paid well for producing content that we love. But it, you know, it's funny because DHH talks about how, you know, unless you're disrupting, then, you know, then you're nothing in Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
And it's almost like and this happens in film and it's happened in video and all these different, and music, you know, and music seems to have gone the way of the subscription, the tiny, tiny, tiny fractions of a penny per play and everything. And that seems to have, if it's not working for music, it seems to have settled into that pattern because there was a precedent for it with radio play.
Yeah.
Whereas with video and with long form writing, I get the feeling that we're not there yet. There's no, you know, comfortable model that anybody's like, you know, happy to say long term, this is the way we want to consume independently created content.
Yeah, there's clearly room for disruption.
Well, you know, yeah, I guess has the disruption just left a big vacuum?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, yeah. It was not that I have my finger on the pulse of Silicon Valley in any way, shape, or form, but
come on, you do.
it wasn't a huge shock reading that article from Ev. I'll be honest. I thought it was very open and very a very positive thing that he did in terms of putting that out there. But yeah, it's been interesting to follow some of the responses, and we'll absolutely link up all those four or five articles we referenced.
Yeah,
in our Medium post relating to this blog post that we will put out on our own site. Oh, I don't know.
Would love to hear what people think about this as well. I know we joke about comments and everything.
Well, we don't have comments.
We don't have comments. But on Twitter, I'd love to hear what people think about this because, you know, I think it's very hard from a product point of view to sit there. Oh, sorry, easy from the outside to sit there and say, you should do X, Y, and Z. There's money. Do it. But you're only coming from that very narrow perspective.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not seeing the whole picture. But I'd love to hear anybody who's who spent time considering that whole picture to comment on it.
Yeah.
And I'm interested to see what they come up with. You know, I don't think it's that. I genuinely will be shocked if they announce that they're shutting it down entirely.
Oh no, I don't think that will happen.
No.
But But yeah, if you feel like hitting us up, you can hit Kieran up on at Kieran Marsterton on the Twitter.
Yes.
Or me at Kier Whitaker. That's very confusing for people. Do you actually have your misspelling of Kieran Marsterton?
No, I don't.
I only say that because I have to say that to Siri.
Because mine's not a misspelling.
Yeah, I have to say that to Siri in order to call you. Yes. Kieran Marsterton. Calling?
Do you actually use Siri?
No, I've turned it off.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been overhelpful at inappropriate times. Anyways. And finally, we've got a good one this week.
We have, yeah.
Yeah, hit me.
Well, I thought you were going to hit me.
Okay, caveweek.com.
Seamless. Yeah, caveweek.com from Drew Wilson.
Drew Wilson. A lot of respect for Drew Wilson. Done some great stuff. Had the privilege of chatting to him once at Brooklyn Beta. Very interesting guy. Yeah. We walked from venue to venue. Not arm in arm or anything like that, but chatting.
Skipping.
Yeah. I think he kind of... You remember when he made those really nice eye concepts, pictos and things like that?
Vaguely.
Yeah. I think he has $30 of my hard-earned cash somewhere. But he's coding for a week with little or no sleep, and he's live streaming it. That cannot be good, can it?
What I will say is I watched about 20 minutes of it.
Are we sleeping right now? He's sleeping.
And you do get sucked in.
Oh, it's like Big Brother, isn't it? Reality TV. I remember the first series ever. I came in at got up one morning and my flatmate had been watching it. This was in the UK back in 2000, whenever it started. And I was like, he said, what have you been doing? He said, I've been up all night watching them sleep. I'm like, what are you doing? This is crazy.
It was strangely, common, I think, that type of behaviour when it first came out. But I think what Drew's doing is interesting. Like, it's really interesting. I was watching a bit of it where he was just saying he's nailed the front end of what he was trying to do. That's all working. It's how it should, all that sort of stuff. And someone in the comments said, do you do automated testing? And Drew was like, no, never. Not for this stuff. Because I wrote the foundational bits of this a long time ago in jQuery and something else. And I didn't do any automated testing then. So nothing I do front end wise has that, and of course instantly the chat room erupted. But it's kind of interesting to it's very easy in the developer world to sit there and to be like, this is how how things should be done. People are very good at telling you how you should do things and how, and actually people are very quick to vilify people who've done something badly and to point out their shortcomings. But, I think if you actually sat there looking over their shoulder, there'd be lots of shortcuts taken. There'd be lots of things that were done less than perfectly, because when you're working in a commercial environment, deadlines are there, people ask for things that are not, necessarily the done thing. You and I were talking about modals the other day.
It was a great conversation.
It was. We tell you what, we are really exciting to hang out with.
Yeah. Oh man.
the great modal conversation of early 2017.
Yeah.
It was
deep.
But anyway, my point is that watching him code and stuff and watching him make decisions and choose to do things to expedite a specific feature he's working on, for example, made me think, a lot of other people do that kind of stuff too. It's not just me who's, people who are in the public eye and who are held up as sort of bastions of amazing coding do this as well.
Yeah.
It's not just me.
But he's still going.
So yeah.
He's still going.
That's what I got from it.
He's got you got more than me. I just was like, no sleep for a week. But he's a brave man. His office looks quite nice though.
There is something going on though, isn't there?
Yeah,
he's on the live stream.
Yeah, he looks like he's just I've got kind of some stubble in shot. Just a bit of a chin at the moment.
Well, that's the very beginning of it. But I think basically it plays back the whole thing.
Oh, okay. Got you.
8 hours worth of it or whatever.
Wow. But check it out. Well, it'll be finished by the time, but I'm sure it'll be archived for inspiration. So you can go and check it out. Interesting.
I thought it was quite cool that you could interact with him as well, like chat with me on the group chat, make me listen to your favorite music by adding it to the Spotify playlist.
Yeah.
DoorDash me some food.
I love that.
send me cool things at my office. Yeah.
We should do that. We'd be waiting in, like hoping the door went and
nothing.
Nobody
from the.
No daps.
Secret fan club.
No monogram daps have arrived from some ardent listener.
From a sponsor.
No cake.
Sponsor.
No, like monogram moleskin. I don't know. Whatever next. Anyways, yeah, check it out. Caveweek.com. Cool. Right, I think that's it for this week. I'll say this week. Who knows? This month? This year? No, surely not. Surely. Shirley?
No.
Who's Shirley?
I'm sure there's going to be another episode this year.
There will. That we can probably. Unequivocally.
Well, I'm going to guarantee it.
You heard it here first. And we'll make 50 this year. I know it. But anyway.
Hang on a second. We will get to number 50 is what Keir's saying. We will not make 50 podcasts this year.
No. We shall endeavour to at least make 4 more.
Yes.
But anyways, it's been a pleasure as always. I shall leave you to your coffees, your caffeine and bathroom choices, whatever else you're working on in the year.
I think we should clarify bathroom choices for listeners.
Oh, yes. Maybe we should.
He means picking stuff to put in my new bathroom, not anything to do with yes.
Yeah, you keep sending me links of like, which tap should I go for, Keir? And, what do you think of this waste pipe? Oh, it's very UK, very you.
Yeah,
and all that stuff. Anyways, we shall convene, or reconvene, I should say, very soon. Thanks for listening.
Cheers.